Hello and welcome back to our digital class on physical chemistry of polymers. This is its last lesson unit entitled Osmotic Pressure. In our preceding two lesson units, we've got to know the fundamental theoretical approach to quantitatively appraise the thermodynamics of mixing in multi-chain polymer systems. A central quantity in that context was the Flory-Huggins interaction parameter, the chi parameter, which adopts a numerical value for a given polymer-solvent system, footnote, or a given polymer-polymer blend, at a certain set of experimental parameters, meaning at a certain set of chain length or degree of polymerization and temperature. And only if this given value is smaller than a critical value, which is 1/2 for polymer-solvent systems and practically 0 for polymer blends, we will observe miscibility. In our last lesson unit, we have developed the ability to actually create plots of the two most practically relevant variables against each other, temperature and the system's composition, assessed by its volume fraction, delimiting regions wherein which mixing is stable, instable, or metastable. We refer to that as a phase diagram. Again, a central parameter for the kind of appearance of the phase diagram is the chi parameter. In the lesson unit before the last one, which was our seventh lesson unit, we have introduced what this central key parameter is and got to know it as an energy bilance of the mixing process on microscopic levels, bilancing the energy loss upon breakage of former AA and BB type contacts and the energy gain from the establishment of new AB type contacts. Whereas this definition is certainly satisfactory to polymer theory scientists, it is not yet overly helpful for polymer experimental scientists. What those fellows need, and with fellows I actually mean the majority of the community, is an experimental methodology to experimentally probe the Flory-Huggins interaction parameter, chi. This methodology is in the focus of this present lesson unit. It is based upon the phenomenon of osmotic pressure. In fact, as we will see throughout the following discussion, this method does not only yield us the Flory-Huggins chi parameter, but analogously also the excluded volume, which in fact is a parameter of similar significance and meaning as the chi parameter. Like the chi parameter, the excluded volume, denoted VE in our lecture, is a quantity expressing the extent of thermodynamic match or mismatch between the polymer and the surrounding medium. To get to that, let's consider the experimental setup sketched in figure 59. We see a vessel containing a solvent, and immersed into that, we see a second vessel containing a polymer solution, which is separated from the external vessel by solid glass walls, and only one of the walls, the lowermost one, is of different nature. It's a semi-permeable membrane that consists of pores large enough to let the solvent molecules slip through, but too small to let the polymer macromolecules slip through. As a result, there is a difference of the concentration and therewith the chemical potential in the system between the innermost and the outermost system part, which would normally be the driving force for a diffusion process to set in, by which the macromolecules would diffuse from the interior to the exterior system part until their concentration is the same, meaning homogeneous all over. This, however, is prohibited by the size of the small pores in the semi-permeable membrane, and as a result, if the polymer cannot go from the inner to the outer system part, the solvent takes action and goes from the outer to the inner system part, leading to a diffusive influx of solvent from the reservoir part of the system to the inner part of the system. With that, the solvent exerts an osmotic pressure onto the inner system part. In a setup illustrated in figure 59, the system can evade that pressure by rays of a fluid column in a capillary tube. That, however, in turn, creates a counteracting hydrostatic pressure, and equilibrium is reached when the two pressures, the osmotic one and the hydrostatic one, are at balance. This is expressed to you in equation 4.34, wherein which the hydrostatic pressure is also written out. With that equation, we can measure the osmotic pressure pi simply by measuring the climbing height of the fluid column in the capillary tube, delta H. Furthermore, from elementary physical chemistry 1, we know the equation of state of osmotic systems. It's the Van't Hoff equation, as denoted in equation number 4.35. Osmotic pressure pi times volume V equals the molar number of molecules N times thermal energy RT. This equation can be rearranged, as it's done in equation 4.36, by first isolating the variable pi on the left-hand side of the equation, giving us nRT over V in the right-hand side. Footnote, at this point, in classical physical chemistry textbooks, the term n over V is commonly abbreviated as C, the molar concentration, moles per volume, giving a notation of the Van't Hoff equation of kind pi equals CRT. In polymer science, the measure of concentration is not so much the molar concentration, as the mole is ill-defined in polymer science if we have to deal with polydispersed systems. But by contrast, concentration is rather measured in a mass per volume fashion, denoted in the unit grams per liter, or as many people often actually say, milligrams per milliliter. We can easily introduce that kind of measure to equation 4.36 by replacing N by M over the molar mass, capital M. which in the case of the presence of a molar mass distribution is its number average value, mn, thereby giving us the notation of the Van't Hoff equation pi equals m over mn times rt over v. Now, the polymer science variant of the concentration m over v can be introduced, transforming that into crt over mn. With that, we have identified a very first practical utility of the kind of experimentation shown in figure 59. It's a method to determine the molar mass of a polymeric species. This is actually not restricted to polymer systems, but in fact, osmometry is a general method in physical chemistry to determine molar masses or molecular weights of any kinds of substance, polymeric or non-polymeric. We could have actually guessed that already from the initial notation of the Van't Hoff equation, P times V equals nRT. Here we have a factor N inside, which is the number of molecules involved in the osmotically active solution. That means by measuring the osmotic pressure, which can be simply done by measuring the climbing height delta H of the fluid column in the capillary tube in figure 59, allows us to determine the N. And if we know from the setup of the experiment what mass of the substance M we have put into the solution, then dividing the one by the other gives the mass per amount, the number of grams per mole, a molar mass. From your elementary physical chemistry 1 education, hopefully you remember that osmometry, with that sort of applicability, is one representative of a whole class of methodologies that rely upon so-called colligative properties. Next to the phenomenon of osmotic pressure, other kinds of colligative properties are the depression of the freezing point and the elevation of the boiling point of a fluid medium that has a substance of interest dissolved in it. In all those, the extent of the effect, meaning the extent of the freezing point depression or the extent of the boiling point elevation or the extent of the arise of osmotic pressure, is proportional to the number of molecules dissolved in our fluid, which therefore is a means to determine this number. And with that, to determine the molar mass, if the initial starting gram amount of the material that has been used for the experiment is known from the setup of the experiment. In these three methods, however, the extent of the effect is different. It is least pronounced for boiling point elevation, more pronounced for freezing point depression, and yet even more pronounced for the osmotic pressure. That's the reason why the method of osmometry is the most famous and widespread one for experimental molar mass determination. Specifically, if the number of moles of our analyte species is small in the solution, as it is in polymer solutions. Because in polymers, we have a high molar mass, and as a result, in a given initial gram amount of polymer in our solution, there is only a few molecules, which are then heavy each on the other hand. To accurately determine the molar mass on the basis of a colligative property, we need one that shows a high extent of effect, and that is osmometry. In our lecture script, you find a footnote that details to you why exactly it is the number average molar mass that is determined with this method in the case of the presence of a non-uniform, that means distributed, ensemble of molar masses in the sample. We can qualitatively guess this already from the discussion we just had. Osmometry is a representative of a class of phenomena named colligative properties, and those are proportional to the number of moles of molecules in the analyte solution. And as such, it's somehow logical that the outcome is a number-weighted quantity. As said, a more detailed mathematical discussion and proof of that is given to you in the footnote of the accompanying lecture script. What we have discussed so far, however, is actually valid only for dilute solutions. That's the limit of applicability of the Van't Hoff equation. It only holds for dilute solutions wherein which interactions are not yet relevant, as the concentration is too little for them to manifest themselves in a remarkable extent. For non-dilute solutions, however, there is deviation from ideality. A phenomenological approach in physical chemistry to account for such deviations from ideality usually is to expand the ideal equation into a virial series. For our Van't Hoff law, this is done in equation 4.37. What we do here is we first move the factor C in the equation to the left-hand side by dividing through it, thereby turning the osmotic pressure pi into a reduced osmotic pressure, pi over C. Footnote here, this is a general nomenclature in physical chemistry. Whenever we have a quantity normalized to concentration, we speak about that as a reduced quantity. Similarly, as whenever we normalize a quantity to the mass, we refer to that as a specific quantity. And whenever we normalize a quantity to the molar number n, we refer to that as a molar quantity. The right-hand side of the equation is then Rt over mn, which we now expand into a virial series, as given in the parentheses term on the right-hand side of equation 4.37. We expand the equation into a power law series of the parameter C in the form of a sum of increasing power law degrees of C. We have C with a power of 0 in the first summand, which then just is 1 and therefore doesn't optically appear there. That then just gives us the first virial coefficient in the form of 1 over mn. The second term, A2 times C with the power of 1, features the second virial coefficient, A2, and then come further higher order virial series terms, with a third, fourth, fifth, and so on virial coefficient, accompanying even higher power law appearances of the parameter C. The most relevant parameter in this virial series expansion is the second virial coefficient, A2. That's the parameter that accounts for deviations from the ideal van't Hoff law due to interactions at higher concentration. So we can see here already that that's the parameter that expresses to us the extent of thermodynamic compatibility between the polymer and the solvent, and as such must be somehow related to the parameter chi and Ve, the Flory-Huggins interaction parameter, and the excluded volume. Very often, in practice, only two terms of the virial series expansion are actually needed, so very often the series is interrupted after the second summit. Then the virial series equation adopts the form of a linear equation if we plot the reduced osmotic pressure pi over C as a function of C. Such a plot is shown to you in figure 60 of our script. It features an intercept of RT over MN, meaning from that intercept we can experimentally determine the number average molar mass, and it features a slope of RT times A2. So from that slope we can determine the second virial coefficient A2. As just said already, that parameter quantifies the extent of thermodynamic interaction between the polymer and the solvent. If it turns out to be larger than zero, meaning positive, we have good solvation of the polymer in the solvent. By contrast, if it turns out to be smaller than zero, meaning negative, we have bad solvation, or we have to actually better say non-solubility of the polymer in the solvent. And at the intermediate state, if A equals zero, we have no effective interactions, denoting to us the presence of the theta state. That makes also perfect sense when we look upon equation 4.37 and imagine it to be interrupted after the A2 term, because in that case, if A2 is zero, that A2 term is also not present. And then on the right-hand side of the equation 4.37, we only have RT over MN, which is nothing else than the elementary van't Hoff equation again. That holds for the ideal state. At this point, note the striking similarity between the van't Hoff equation and the ideal gas law, respectively the virial series expansion of the van't Hoff law and the virial series expansion of the ideal gas law. Also in this context, note the relation between the second virial coefficient in both these expansions. Both are a measure of interactions in the system. A2 is a measure of interactions between a dissolved polymer and its solvent medium, whereas the second virial coefficient B in the virial series expansion of the ideal gas law denotes interactions between the gas molecules, and as such it's also directly related to the other kind of mathematical treatment of that situation, which is the van der Waals equation and the thereby introduced van der Waals parameters small a and small b, corresponding to repulsive and attractive intermolecular interactions. In further analogy, we know from the real gas law already that there is one specific state present, which is the state at the boil temperature, where these attractive and repulsive interactions between the gas molecules are at balance. That turns the second virial coefficient in the virial series expansion of the ideal gas equation to be zero, meaning the real gas law then to match the ideal gas law. At that state, the real gas behaves quasi or pseudo-ideal, in a sense that, in contrast to a truly ideal state, it is not free of interactions, but its interactions are at balance. Something related is encountered in polymer solutions, where in the theta state that is present at the theta temperature, the relative to the boil temperature here, so to speak, also attractive and repulsive effective monomer-monomer interactions that actually map the interplay of actual monomer-monomer and actual monomer-solvent interactions are at balance, such that the coil displays its unperturbed ideal Gaussian chain conformation. Figure 61 shows to us a schematic of the typical appearance of experimental datasets acquired for the polymer PMMA, polymethyl methacrylate, in different solvents. We see that we get a flat line with slope 0 if the solvent is metaxylene, which therefore denotes this solvent, at the given temperature at which this experiment is done, to be a theta solvent. By contrast, we have a positive slope in dioxane, denoting this to be a good solvent, and we have an even steeper positive slope, and in fact, deviation from a linear course already, if the solvent is chloroform. This denotes to us that here the solvent quality is so good, so to speak, that interrupting the virial series expansion of the van't Hoff law after the second virial coefficient term is actually insufficient, and we need higher terms here, at least the C square term, coming along with the third virial coefficient, A3, that accounts for interactions between three and not only two bodies in the system. All these curves, however, cross in the same common intercept, which makes perfect sense, because that intercept has nothing to do with the solvent quality, but instead with a number average molar mass, which of course is the same for all datasets, as they are all recorded with the very same PMMA polymer. Okay, our so far discussion has clarified to us the working principle of osmotic experiments and the valuable outcome of them, which is that they are first an experimental means to determine molar masses of polymers, and second an experimental means to determine the extent of polymer-solvent interactions in the solution. As said in the beginning of this lesson unit, two parameters that we know from our so far polymer physical chemistry discussion throughout the course of this lecture are the Flory-Huggins chi parameter and the excluded volume parameter. These, of course, must be somehow related to each other and to the experimental second virial coefficient A2. In the following, we want to appraise how exactly this relation is. As a starting point for this estimate, we consider the thermodynamic definition of the osmotic pressure, as it's given to us in equation 4.38. The osmotic pressure pi is defined to be the negative derivative of the mixing free energy delta F mix by volume. This is understandable to us because that's very close to the thermodynamic definition of pressure. Pressure is defined as minus dF by dV, the negative derivative of the free energy by volume. And here its variant osmotic pressure is obtained in a variant approach by the volume derivative of the mixing free energy of a mixed solution state. The very right-hand side of equation 4.38 denotes to us the same expression in a notation where we have the molar free mixing energy, delta F mix bar, denoted. From our preceding discussion of osmotic pressure experiments, we have seen that the experimental second virial coefficient, A2, is introduced, and therefore also obtained from, a notation of the expanded Van't Hoff law that features the reduced osmotic pressure, pi over C on the left-hand side. That means our following theoretical approach must be based upon transferring equation 4.38 into such a form, where it's normalized to the concentration C. So far in our discussion on the mixing free energy, delta F mix, however, we have used a different measure of concentration, which was the volume fraction, phi. So let us proceed by first using this variable as a measure of concentration, and then later on down the road see how we can transfer that into concentration C. So far, at this point, we even have a more fundamental problem. In equation 4.38, which is the starting point for our whole discussion, the concentration phi doesn't even appear. What appears is volume. But we can establish a connection between phi and volume, as it's given in equation 4.39a, that we may also express in a differential form as denoted in equation 4.39b. Inserting that into equation 4.38 allows us to switch the variable v to the variable phi, giving us equation 4.40. Furthermore, from the Flory-Huggins theory, we know an expression for delta F mix, or delta F mix bar, the molar mixing free energy, which is given to us again in equation 4.22, that was obtained two lesson units ago in the context of the discussion of the Flory-Huggins theory. What we have to do next is to plug this expression into equation 4.40 and then do the differentiation that is demanded from us here. Differentiate this by phi. This, however, is nasty, as phi in the Flory-Huggins equation enters in some quite complicated form, for example, in the form of ln of 1 minus phi. This is nasty to differentiate. But we can make our lives easy by expanding this nasty term into a simplifying series expansion itself, as it's done in equation 4.41. Plugging this into the Flory-Huggins equation turns it into the variant form as given in equation 4.42. And plugging this into equation 4.40 eventually delivers us equation 4.43. From that, we can proceed by transforming it into a form where we replace the measure of concentration volume fraction by a measure of concentration C, which is not yet grams per liter, but units per liter, the number of chain segments per volume, which we get by defining C to be phi over V0, whereby, by the way, V0 denotes to us the volume of one single lattice side in the Flory-Huggins lattice picture and was introduced earlier throughout our derivation already in equation 4.39a. This replacement gives us equation 4.44a, and factoring out C from it and dividing from it finally gives us the desired form with pi over C, the reduced osmotic pressure on the left-hand side, as denoted in equation 4.44b. If we compare the general form of that equation to the one of equation 4.37, that was the phenomenological virial series expansion of the Van't Hoff law, we realize that they are both of kind as it's written in general form in equation 4.45. The reduced osmotic pressure, pi over C, generally is given to us as thermal energy times a parenthesis term that features one summand of kind 1 over chain length, which is given as 1 over the degree of polymerization in equation 4.44b, respectively as 1 over mn in equation 4.37, plus a second summand, which is of general appearance interaction parameter times concentration. In equation 4.37, the interaction parameter was the phenomenological second virial coefficient A2, Whereas in equation 4.44b, we identify it to be the product term featuring the parentheses in the parentheses ahead of the c over 2 increment. So, apparently, this must be some kind of interaction parameter. Furthermore, we can simply tell what physical unit this must have. The first summit in the parentheses of equation 4.44b is dimensionless. It's 1 over the degree of polymerization of species A. This doesn't have a physical unit. This means the second summit must also have no physical unit. The C in it has the physical unit inverse liters. That means all the rest must have a unit of liters. So in this notation, this lengthy factor ahead of the C is some kind of quantity that has the unit liters and that captures interactions. Does this ring a bell in your head? Yes, we know already a quantity doing that. That's the excluded volume. The excluded volume is a quantity of exactly that kind. It's a quantity that has a unit volume and that is a measure of interactions. So that means in equation 4.44b, we identify the second virial coefficient to be the excluded volume, as it's also written out in equation 4.46a. We can briefly discuss this for a minute. It features a parameter nb. That's the degree of polymerization of our component b. That's the component with which the polymer is mixed. It's either a low molar mass solvent, then nb is 1, or it's also a polymer, then nb is something large. When we consider the first case, where nb is 1, and furthermore consider a theta state, where in which chi is 1/2, then according to equation 4.46a, Ve will be 0. Makes perfect sense. In a polymer solution at the theta state, the excluded volume is 0. By contrast, if we consider an athermal state, then chi is 0, because an athermal state in polymer physical chemistry corresponds to what in elementary physical chemistry we name an ideal mixture, where in which interactions of kind A with A, B with B, and A with B are all the same. This is what we got to know as the athermal situation, in which chi is 0. Footnote, do not confuse this with an ideal state. That would be a theta state in which the coils display their ideal random walk type conformations. If we plug in chi being 0 and nb being 1 in equation 4.46a, then the outcome is Ve is V0, meaning the excluded volume is then maximally positive, coinciding with the elementary segmental volume of the polymeric species. This makes also perfect sense, because that's exactly how we have defined an athermal solvent to be in our fourth lesson unit. A contrast scenario would be one of a polymer blend rather than a polymer solution. In this case, Nb is a lot larger than 1. Furthermore, we know in this case, chi must be close to 0, because that's needed to actually mix the two components in the blends, as we have seen in our last lesson unit. This set of parameters, Nb being a lot larger than 1 and chi being 0, plugged in equation 4.46a, gives Ve to be V0 over Nb, and as Nb shall be large, this gives us something close to 0. This means, in a polymer mixture, in a polymer blend, chains adopt their ideal conformation, like in a theta state. Note the difference between the blend and the athermal solution here. In both cases, we have chi being 0. But by contrast, the excluded volume in the solution is maximally positive then, whereas in the blend, it's 0, coinciding with the ideal theta state coil conformations. We have discussed the phenomenological reason for this already at an earlier stage of our lecture course, which was such that in an athermal solvent, the polymer coils have maximal coil expansion tendency. Footnote, this is not quite correct. The expansion tendency would be even larger if there were actual repulsive interactions between the monomer units, for example, as it's the case in the polyelectrolyte sample. But this is a special case scenario that we disregard here. And as a result, they largely expand, which, by the way, also gives us a larger value of the Flory exponent, which in fact quantifies the extent of coil expansion, meaning the coil size, as captured by the coil root mean square end-to-end distance, for example, as a function of the given degree of polymerization. By very contrast, in a polymer blend, this all is not the case. The coils are not expanded, but by contrast display their ideal Gaussian-type unperturbed conformations. Although in a polymer blend, the mixing thermodynamics between the polymer and the medium is also very good. Just as in an athermal solvent, it's characterized by a chi value close to 0. That must be the case, because otherwise it wouldn't even mix in the first place. So why can we imagine the thermodynamic quality of the solvent, so to speak, in a polymer blend to be very good on the one hand, but on the other hand, this not to lead to remarkable coil expansion as it does in an athermal solvent solution? The answer is that the coil expansion tendency holds for all coils in the system, which are densely packed to a volume fraction of 1 in the blend state, which is a melt state. If every coil in such a packed setting wants to expand, no coil actually can. And so, whereas the thermodynamics is very good, or actually athermal even, this is not capable of actually inducing coil swelling. We can further express this to us in a variant form of equation 4.46a, which is written in equation 4.46b, in which we identify the excluded volume VE to be a difference of the chain segmental volume L cube over NB, which is some sort of co-volume of the chain segments, minus the effective chain segment interactions. In this notation, the first summand, the first term L cube over NB, corresponds to the hard sphere repulsive branch of the Meyer F function, whereas the second term, 2 times L cube chi, corresponds to the attractive potential well part of the Meyer F function. The inner and co-play of both together determines the excluded volume, meaning the negative volume integral over the Meyer F function. For the special theta state, where VE is zero, the coil expansion tendency due to the co-volume of the segments, meaning the repulsive hard sphere branch of the Meyer F function, just exactly balances the coil contraction due to the effective attractive segment-segment interactions as given by the potential well part of the Meyer F function. Again, this is a perfect analogy to the situation in a real gas at the boil temperature. Here, attractive interactions, as reflected by the van der Waals parameter A, balance the repulsive interactions that manifest themselves as the molecular co-volume, as reflected by the van der Waals parameter B. So once more at this point, we note the striking similarity between the concept of ideal and real gases and ideal and real polymers. Both feature a very similar equation of state, the ideal gas law, respectively van 't Hoff's law, and the virial series expansion forms of them. Both are treated by similar approaches, namely virial series expansions to account for deviations from ideality, and the same type of quantity, namely a second virial coefficient, quantifies interactions and co-volume of the species. Footnote, yet another area where striking similarity is seen between gases and polymers is the area of entropy-based elasticity, which is displayed by both these species. Gases display a counteracting force against compression because that takes away liberty from the molecules to arrange themselves in space, meaning it reduces entropy. And polymers resist against stretching because that takes away liberty for local chain conformations to be wild mixtures of cis and trans states, but by contrast enforces more of them to be in the trans state, thereby reducing the entropy to realize a given macroscopic chain conformation by a set of local microscopic sequences of local cis or trans bond conformations. Getting back to equation number 4.44b, we can rewrite it somewhat more. The form of the equation as it's noted down there has a single molecule focus. We can identify that by realizing that thermal energy is expressed not as RT but KBT here, which is the thermal energy not per moles of molecules but per single molecule. Also, the concentration in there has the unit units per liter, also focusing on single molecular entities here. We may also transform this into a form that accounts for greater ensembles of molecules, by introducing the mass per volume concentration with a unit grams per liter by defining C to be volume fraction phi over the specific volume of the polymer. Whereas to get to equation 4.44b, or its predecessor equation 4.44a, we had to find C to be volume fraction phi over V0, the unit lattice or sequential volume of a polymeric repeating unit or solvent molecule. This gives us equation 4.47, which here is denoted down for the case of a polymer solution, meaning focusing on a non-polymerized medium component. When we compare this to our initial experimental van 't Hoff equation 4.37, we see the targeted connection between the phenomenological second virial coefficient A2 and the Flory-Huggins interaction parameter chi, as it's given in equation 4.48. Based on that identity, chi can be determined experimentally from an osmotic pressure experiment. And furthermore, that can also be translated into the excluded volume VE, as we have seen some few minutes ago. With that, we're at the end of this lesson unit. We have finalized our discussion on polymer thermodynamics by outlining an experimental means to determine the key thermodynamic parameters that we have got to know so far theoretically in our lecture course. We have also seen that the same method is also useful to yield yet another valuable piece of information, namely information about the degree of polymerization of our chains, as reflected by their molar mass. In conjunction with other methods that give us different kinds of averages of the molar mass, for example, static light scattering, which gives us the weight average molar mass, is then furthermore also a method to contribute partial information on the width of the distribution of a non-uniform molar mass in a polymer example. What we have also seen in this lesson unit is some very deep and fundamental connections between elementary physical chemistry and polymer physical chemistry. With that, I hope that this lecture can actually contribute to build bridges in your mind, bridges between seemingly disconnected fields in your chemistry studies, such that you realize them to be quite fundamentally related to each other, in fact. This brings me back to the very beginning of this lecture course and its overall intent, which is to create a bridge between the fields of polymer chemistry, meaning between microscopic molecular scale chemical structures of polymers, and the field of polymer engineering, meaning macroscopic polymer properties that further translate into practically relevant function of polymer-based materials, composites, systems, functional units, and devices. With this closing point of our ninth and last lesson unit, we also close the lecture Physical Chemistry of Polymers 1. In this lecture, it was our goal that we have now achieved to establish a solid fundament for this bridge, which we have illustrated to us in the very first figure of this class as three pillars that carry our arcing bridge, which represent the subfields of our course, single-chain statistics, multi-chain interactions, and chain dynamics. So with that, at this stage, what we have is the fundament for our bridge. What we not yet have is the actual bridge on top. If you're eager and interested to finalize that construction, I hereby warmly and heartily invite you to also attend the second part of this class, Physical Chemistry of Polymers 2, which is taught on master levels of the chemistry studies, in which then we will erect the actual bridge onto the fundament we now have, which will then make us understand why and how polymers have shaped our materials world into nothing less than from the Stone Age over the Iron Age and Bronze Age to the Polymer Age. In a sense that, whereas small molecules have prolonged our lives, large molecules have increased its quality.